Hey everybody, Paul Boyer, Mad Mum Machine, Season 2, Episode 2, for 23rd May 2014. Have you kind of lost that feeling about Bitcoin? Well, there's some very wealthy guys on this show that'll help you get that feeling again. Welcome to the Mad Money Machine.
Broadcasting from the Bitcoin bunker, six blocks below, brandishing the blockchain to fight good versus evil. This is Bitcoin versus the man. This is the battle of the century. This is the Mad Money Machine.
The Mad Money Machine is supported by listeners like you and by Brokker.com. Buy Bitcoins with your credit card or PayPal, or spend Bitcoins nearly everywhere. Coming up on this episode, one of the most amazing scientific discoveries about the universe I've ever seen. Where'd my CryptoKit go? Oh, there it is. It's back now. CryptoKit went missing this week from Chrome browsers. The emergency announcement out on Reddit from the CryptoKit developers talked about the fact that Google just up and removed CryptoKit from their extensions website and removed it automatically from every browser that had it installed. And it wasn't very long thereafter that Google themselves responded to this issue, actually there at the same place on Reddit, in the rBitcoin subreddit. A gentleman by the name of Tyler, goes by the handle Tyler Chrome, said, "Chrome team here, here's what happened with CryptoKit this morning. First, a malware developer hoping to steal Bitcoin keys copied the CryptoKit extension codebase in order to build their own malicious extension. Two, the pipelines that we used to detect malware flagged the real CryptoKit extension as being nearly identical since the vast majority of the effective code and assets were the same, causing the extension to be blacklisted. We noticed the conversation on Reddit, many of us are enthusiasts too, and realized what had taken place. The CryptoKit extension was restored and re-enabled on users' machines. No data was removed from user machines at any point." Nice to know that things are working again, but it's then you think about it, huh, that's kind of unsettling that Google can just remove an extension from my browser whenever they want to. Welcome to the world of centrally controlled apps and extensions. Well, welcome back, Bitcoin 2014 Amsterdam attendees, and congratulations to those who won the blockchain awards in various categories, including the Let's Talk Bitcoin podcast, of which the Madman Machine is part of the Let's Talk Bitcoin network, not taking any credit whatsoever for their winning their award, as it stands on their own. That podcast is the one that won Most Informative Bitcoin Podcast, Let's Talk Bitcoin. And I think the award was made for Let's Talk Bitcoin. Just like the award for Most Visionary Academic Paper was made for Satoshi Nakamoto to win it. I'm not sure about the other ones. Most influential investor, Mark Andreessen. Best ATM design, Lamassu BTC. Most insightful journalist, 2-bit idiot, Ryan Selkis. And as they say out at Coindesk.com, the Bitcoin Champion Award, they say it went to Andreas Antonopoulos, but he passed the award on to Matthew Keenahan. Keenahan, who also won an award for Most Impactful Charity, that's the Bitcoin Society, and the Best Mobile App went to Mycelium, the Android wallet. Most Creative Video, I Am Satoshi. Bitcoin Legal Expert, Marco Santori. Also out at the Bitcoin 2014 Amsterdam Conference, came some big announcements. Circle finally showed off their website, making some headlines. It's going to be free to get in and out of Bitcoin using Circle. Of course, you'll have to give up some of your identity, credit cards, bank account information, so forth. Just like you would when you get into Coinbase. The thinking is that Coinbase will eventually lower their fees as well. Competition is good. And the keynote speaker out at the Bitcoin 2014 Amsterdam conference was Overstock CEO Patrick Byrne. And I'll play the introduction for you now.
Our keynote speaker today is a liberal in the classical tradition. He considers himself to be from the Austrian School of Economics and a leader in exposing Wall Street corruption. He has triple degrees from Dartmouth, Cambridge University, and Stanford University. As CEO of Overstock.com, he took the company from $1 million in revenue to over $1.3 billion in revenue. He is a true pioneer, and he made history in the Bitcoin world when Overstock became the first major online retailer to accept Bitcoin. So, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to take this opportunity right now to introduce our keynote speaker, Mr. Patrick Byrne.
Triple degrees from Dartmouth, Cambridge, and Stanford. Woo! So if you thought this was going to be a talk about how Overstock uses Bitcoin in their operations, you might have been surprised. Patrick Byrne, and first of all, I want to credit CoinsiderThis.com for putting the video of his talk out on YouTube. But Patrick Byrne went into more of the philosophical, historical, theoretical discussion, wide-ranging, talking about freedom and trust in the world. At one point, he talked about Locke, Rousseau, Voltaire, Kant, Hegel, Marx, Nietzsche, Lenin, Mao, and Pol Pot. He referred to a book by Francis Fukuyama called Trust, which talks about the need for centralized institutions, comes out of an authoritarian tradition. Yeah, the kind of the background of the philosophy that he was getting into is this battle between those who want freedom and those who want authoritarianism. And you think, why in the world would anyone want authoritarianism? And the bottom line is there that some of those philosophers say freedom equals submission. In order to be free, you must submit to a higher authority. And I don't think they're talking about God in that case. But then he went on to talk about two centralized institutions that could be undermined by cryptography. The first being central banking, the Federal Reserve of the United States, first among those. And then the second one being Central Counterparty Clearing, CCC. And at this point, he got into a bitter talk about Wall Street and how absolutely mind-bogglingly corrupt it is. And a little bit of his history. You know, he was putting Overstock on the public listings back in 2002 time frame. Around 2004 to 2008, he got so involved in trying to expose the corruption on Wall Street that someone sat him down at lunch and said, "You are the most hated man on Wall Street. Do you realize that?" But he thinks that Bitcoin may have slipped under the door soon enough to not be shut off by Wall Street, who controls the government. He sees Bitcoin and cryptography as a robust parallel system to which people can quickly switch. And then at the end of the talk, here's what he said.
Well, by the way, I say this not as I'm a small L liberty guy. I'm not right wing or left. But when people on the left talk about the need to have a robust, muscular government that can stand up to these powerful corporations like Goldman Sachs, they fail to consider the possibility that what happens when your muscular government becomes a wholly owned subsidiary of Goldman Sachs. Now you got the worst of both worlds. So I'm not against all centralized institutions. I just think in the design of institutions, we have to take more consideration of the risk of their capture. And all else being equal, you want peer-to-peer institutions where that where consent plays a role rather than submission. So thank you, John.
And then in response to the last question of the night, he kind of made headlines again.
Hi, my name is John Lai. I work for a company called Cambrian. We're developing some decentralized economy as a service platform. But I'm really curious, when is Overstock going to move their shares over to the blockchain?
Funny you say that. I want to be, if I say this now, it's going to get reported, and then 3 days from now, we have guys locked in a room eating pizza making it happen. It's what I said to some journalists. Oh, we put 40 people in a room, slid pizzas under the door, they got it done in a week. Funny you say that. I want to be the, I want... I would consider issuing a security just to get the first Bitcoin security or blockchain security out there. I'm also exploring the possibility, we're listed on NASDAQ, but can we be dual listed on, we can be, it's possible in the States, you can have stock dual listed on more than one exchange. You know, you can list it, it's listed on NASDAQ, it's listed in Berlin, it's listed, you know, in the Bahamas exchange for, I don't know why, somebody went to all some, not me, somebody out there in the Bahamas went to the trouble to get it done. I believe we could list on a blockchain kind of exchange. And I have some lawyers in the stages, they're talking to two different parties. And if anyone here has a technology or has a solution, call Collect. But I would love to be, at the very least, to take our current NASDAQ traded security and dual list it. And I would also be interested, as I'm gonna get excoriated by the lawyers, but in issuing a bond or something that we could list as this, as be the first to list this kind of security. So call Collect.
Good, I think.
I noticed some people in their blogs, when I first came out and did this, some people said, this guy just did this stuff with Bitcoin for publicity. I'm hoping, if nothing else, this talk dispelled, you understand this is a deep part of my life, what you folks are doing.
Yeah, so the headline there was he wants to be the first company to have a stock listed on the blockchain, in addition to the stock exchange. We'll keep pressing the envelope, Patrick Byrne. So I'm glad I took the hour to listen to his talk. It was actually very interesting. I'll have the link to it in the show notes of Mad Men Machine Season 2, Episode 2. Again, credit to CoinsiderThis.com for filming it and putting it on YouTube. Thanks so much. Now, another heavyweight name in the Bitcoin space, the winner of Most Influential Investor there at the conference, Mark Andreessen, he appeared on Econ Talk. Econ Talk is one of my favorite podcasts. And in all the years that I've been doing the Mad Money Machine, I've only done maybe two or three interviews of people, and Russ Roberts was one of them. Now, I'm not a good interviewer, which is why I don't do interviews. But I really wanted to talk to Russ about his show and learn more about him. And that was going back several years ago. Well, Mark Andreessen on the Econ Talk podcast, Russ asked him a lot of variety of questions about a lot of variety of topics. And of course, at some point he got into talking about Bitcoin. I think just before the question about Bitcoin, Russ asked him about how software will change the world. And Mark is very bullish on software. He talks about how, you know, there are a billion people with personal computers, but very soon there will be 7 billion people with smartphones, which is effectively, you know, a supercomputer from 10 years ago. Everyone on the planet will have now a computer in their pocket able to talk to everyone else on the planet in a few short years. He says that brick and mortar operations, those businesses that operate in a physical location, those that shift into a software mode of operation will be the big winners. And then when he got asked the question, of course, about Bitcoin. Here's what he said.
So you've been very enthusiastic about Bitcoin, and we recently did an episode on Bitcoin. You've actually compared Bitcoin to innovations such as the personal computer and the internet. Very bold claim. What's the source for that enthusiasm?
Yeah, so this is not a claim that I have made about anything else in the last 20 years. So this is the first time I've said this. That indicates sort of the depth of seriousness with which I take it.
At which point he talks a little bit more about Bitcoin and the basics of Bitcoin, but then he gets into really the advanced features of Bitcoin in decentralizing trust. And this is one of the themes that Patrick Byrne talked about in his talk at Amsterdam, is the notion of being able to get rid of these centralized institutions that in which you have to put your trust. This trust can now be decentralized. And let's hear what Mark Andreessen had to say about that.
So then you kind of say, well, okay, we need to have a system through which everybody in the world can establish ownership, which can have a consensus view of who owns what, and then can have a way to transfer ownership from one person to another in a way that can be validated and can be trusted without having to recreate these giant centralized institutions, which might either take decades to build, in systems where the governance is not strong enough to do that yet, or it might just be like prohibitively expensive. And it may not be possible to have what we would consider to be a modern title system for, you know, land in the world where incomes are much lower, which, you know, might be part of sort of the development trap, is it may just not be possible to have that. It may not be cost effective to have the institution required to let people develop economically. And so what if we could just do that digitally, right? What if we could just do that on the internet for free? Well, we can send email back and forth for free. Right? I send messages back and forth. Why can't I send title back and forth? And there were a set of breakthroughs that had to happen around trust and around cryptography that had to happen that in fact happened over the course of the last, you know, 5 or 10 years. And then the key breakthrough was this breakthrough, the Bitcoin breakthrough, by this sort of anonymous inventor, Satoshi Nakamoto, who came up with this idea of the blockchain, which is kind of this trust model for establishing who owns what, who controls what, you know, who has committed to what at different points in time. And so that's a really big breakthrough. And so you can think about that breakthrough, you know, Bitcoin, people think of it as digital money, and it is digital money, but it's deeper than that. It's potentially also digital contracts. It's potentially digital title, digital ownership, digital keys, digital assets, you know, unique media files, which has always been a big problem on the internet. You know, single copies of media could be done this way. And then ultimately, digital stocks, digital bonds, digital loans, digital insurance contracts. And so you can kind of see where I'm headed with this, which is this kind of distributed trust breakthrough is a wedge that the technology has now made possible. And now what's going to happen, and is happening right now, is hundreds and soon thousands of entrepreneurs starting companies to do software-based contracts, software-based signatures, software-based keys, software-based title on all these different categories, using this underlying Bitcoin technology. And that's what's going to happen in the next 5 years. And that's what we're funding.
So Mark Andreessen's pretty bullish about Bitcoin. And it's not just the currency, but it's the whole trust network. The whole decentralized trust network is what he's really excited about. You know, I encourage you to go listen to the whole interview at econtalk.org. I'll have a link to it in the show notes. The beginning of it, he talks more about venture capital and what it's like to pick a set of upstart companies, and you have to find at least one winner out of the basket, the companies that you're funding. But he's excited about funding Bitcoin companies and distributed trust companies. So Brian and Stephanie out at Sex and Science Hour, I know a couple of weeks ago you talked about how you're kind of feeling in the doldrums about Bitcoin. Listening to Mark Andreessen and Patrick Byrne might get your juices flowing again. In fact, you should go play the song by Barry Manilow, Trying to Get the Feeling Again. You can probably find it out on YouTube. It's well worth your time. Well, they're not the only two smart guys talking about Bitcoin. Also, we have Stephen Pear, co-founder of BitPay. Now we're talking about Coinbase, we're talking about Circle, and the third one in the trifecta of Bitcoin exchanges or payment processors is BitPay. Now, in the news this past week, of course, several things about BitPay. One is they got $30 million from venture capitalists to invest in their company. 2, they partnered with Toshiba to put Bitcoin in some of their pay terminals. And 3, they're actually partnered with Euro Pacific Metals, you know, run by Peter Schiff, one of the great Bitcoin haters. They're going to sign up with BitPay to allow you to transfer money to their accounts using BitPay. Well, here's what Stephen Pair had to say on CNBC.
Yes, we're trying to be the leader in Bitcoin business solutions. And today we provide payment processing services for Bitcoins for merchants. And in the future, we'll branch out into other areas as well.
Well, maybe the appropriate question then is, with the growth of Bitcoin as a technology and a payment system, are you trying to displace the Visa and MasterCards of the world?
I suppose you could say that, yes.
$30 million in funding, that certainly gets your attention. So does Jerry Yang and Richard Branson. You've signed up as investors here. Tell us about it.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, we've always felt that BitPay should be a good home for capital for venture capitalists that are seeking exposure to the Bitcoin space. You know, Tony and I believe that from day one when we started the business over 3 years ago.
Isn't it likely, though, that at some point you're going to get innovation from the likes of Visa and MasterCard, and they're going to come in and kind of crush your space? Once they acknowledge that digital currencies are here to stay, if they do that, a big move from them could be very dangerous for you, I would have thought, no?
Well, when we were first contemplating this business, we looked at what it would take to, you know, solve the payment fraud problem with credit cards, which were designed in the 1950s. And our conclusion was that you would end up reinventing Bitcoin. And so that gave us a lot of confidence going forward that if and when MasterCard and Visa do get into the space, that they would actually leverage the Bitcoin technology rather than kind of directly compete with it.
Are you convinced yet that Bitcoin is still at the beginning phases of this revolution? All of these very smart and very wealthy guys talking about the benefits of Bitcoin. Well, there's a couple more wealthy guys talking about Bitcoin. It's the Winklevoss twins. In their headline this past week, they say they think Bitcoin will be bigger than Facebook. Well, you know, when you're starting up a Bitcoin exchange-traded fund, what would you rather, would you say A, Bitcoin's going to be bigger than Facebook, B, Bitcoin is going to shrivel and die, or C, yeah, I don't know, really know what's going to happen to Bitcoin? I think the answer would be A there.
You're listening to Paul Boyer's Mad Money Machine.
Well, do you work at Google or know anyone that works at Google in the Palo Alto area, wherever Google is up there near Silicon Valley? I'm going to be making a trip to that area. And I understand that if you know somebody that works at Google, that they can get you invited to take a tour of the Google campus. And I'd very much like to do that. So I need to know, is there anyone at Google who will send me an invitation to come take a tour of Google? I appreciate it. And speaking of supporters, I'd like to thank some of the supporters of the Mad Money Machine, starting with Brokker.com. Have you seen this website? Brawker.com, Brokker. Kind of like a play on broker, because that's kind of what they do, is brokerage. They broker between Bitcoin and merchandise on the internet, and it's really quite interesting. There's two kinds of people in this world. People who want Bitcoin and people who have Bitcoin and want to spend it on stuff on the internet. Brokker helps bring these two people together. If you want to acquire Bitcoin, you can use your credit card or PayPal to buy stuff that you send to people on the internet, and then what they do is they send you the Bitcoins. So Brokker holds the Bitcoins there for you when you've completed the purchase and the customers received their item. Or if you want to buy something on the internet that, you know, from a place that doesn't accept Bitcoin even, like Starbucks.com, for example, set up an account with Brokker, load it up with some Bitcoins, and then simply click on the button, spend Bitcoins. At this point, you'll enter in what it is you want to buy or have bought for you. You'll point the person to the Starbucks webpage where you buy gift cards. Indicate the amount and the email address you want the gift card sent to. That request then will appear on Brokker. Somebody then can use their credit card to buy that for you and you send them the bitcoins. They get the bitcoins, you get the coffee at Brokker.com. Try it out. Hey, and when you try it out and you buy something, why don't you tweet me at Mad Money Machine what you bought through Brokker.com. Brawker.com. Thank you so very much for being a supporter of the Mad Money Machine. I'd also like to thank Kenneth Halliwell, Dr. Kenneth Halliwell to you, for clicking on the donate button out at madmoneymachine.com and sending 0.1 Bitcoin our way. When you do that, you can indicate up to four lines of text that I'll read on the show. And here's what he wrote. Bitcoin good enough. LTB altcoin push is dumb. Cryptocurrency scarcity, i.e. one coin is necessary. Thank you for coming back. Please keep your separate podcast feed. Well, I will keep a separate podcast feed, but I'm also quite happy to be on the Let's Talk Bitcoin podcast network because the audience there is quite great. And I would be just a tiny little player in the vast ocean of Bitcoin podcasts if it weren't for LTB Network. But thank you so much, Dr. Kenneth Halliwell from Niagara Falls, New York, for sending in your contribution. Also got some contributions from people. Rich Beer sent 10 millibits through TipperCoin. I've got anonymous Bitcoin tips. 3 millibits, 3 millibits, 3 millibits, 3 millibits, and a 22.14 millibit contribution to the Mad Money Machine. I've gotten a couple of tweets from people. Why don't I set up a Patreon account? And I looked at it very quickly. One of the things they seem to say is if you set up a Patreon account, what they'd like for you to do is when somebody sends you money through Patreon, that you send them a little extra goodies. Maybe an extra special show or something. This show is special enough. So if you want to send a recurring payment to the Mad Money Machine, I'd suggest you set up a Coinbase account. You can set up recurring payments using Coinbase. Thank you so very much. Now someone, we talked earlier about how CryptoKit went away and came back. Someone sent me a private message through CryptoKit saying, could I confirm that I received their tip? Well, I can't. Because you didn't send me your private key, your public key. And I didn't get your email address or anything. There's no way for me to correspond with you. So when you send someone a CryptoKit secure message for the first time, you also need to send them your public key in order for them to reply to you. Thank you so very much, Brokker.com, and all the supporters of the Mad Money Machine. If you'd like to support the Mad Money Machine, and the show does need your support, go to madmoneymachine.com. There's a donate button there, and you can have a four-line text read on the show. There's a PayPal donation button, and if you donate with PayPal at the amount of 0.1 Bitcoin or more equivalent, just send me an email with your message. And out at the website, you can find if you don't want to support the show, you just want to tip the show, you can find a Bitcoin address out there as well. Thank you so very much for your support. Time now for Satoshi's Corner.
Satoshi no Corner.
Well, Satoshi Nakamoto left a trail of his thoughts behind in the cryptography mailing list beginning in November of 2008. And one of the first people to respond to Satoshi Nakamoto's paper, among them, was Hal Finney. On November 8th, Hal Finney said in this mailing list, "Bitcoin seems to be a very promising idea. I like the idea of basing security on the assumption that the CPU power of honest participants outweighs that of the attacker. It's a very modern notion that exploits the power of the long tail. When Wikipedia started, I never thought it would work, but it has proven to be a great success for some of the same reasons." And then he goes into how he has trouble understanding some of the technology. Satoshi Nakamoto, on the 9th of November 2008, responded to some of Hal Finney's concerns. For example, Hal Finney was concerned that a transaction might get lost in the network. What if a block, what if a miner doesn't pick up a transaction and put it into a block, and a bunch of blocks go by and that transaction's still hanging out there? Well, Satoshi writes, "Right, nodes keep transactions in their working set until they get into a block. If a transaction reaches 90% of nodes, then each time a new block is found, it has a 90% chance of being in it. And then Hal Finney had a concern about what if a node is keeping two or more chains around as it waits to see which grows fastest, and a block comes in for chain A, which would include a double spend of a coin that is in chain B. Satoshi writes, that does not need to be checked for. The transaction in whichever branch ends up getting ahead becomes the valid one. The other one is invalid. If someone tries to double spend like that, one and only one spend will always become valid, the others invalid. Receivers of transactions will normally need to hold transactions for perhaps an hour or more to allow time for this kind of possibility to be resolved. They can still re-spend the coins immediately, but they should wait before taking an action such as shipping goods. And at the end of Satoshi's reply, he says, I appreciate your questions. I actually did this kind of backwards. I had to write all the code before I could convince myself that I could solve every problem. Then I wrote the paper. I think I will be able to release the code sooner than I could write a detailed spec. You're already right about the most of your assumptions where you filled in the blanks. Satoshi Nakamoto. That's this week's Satoshi's Corner. Had some pretty powerful gurus represented on the show so far in Mark Andreessen and Patrick Byrne and the Winklevi. But let's take one more. Let's play a round of the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of Bitcoin gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the marble, and for the selected guru, give you a little background on their Bitcoin philosophy. So here we go. And the winner this time on Mad Machine Season 2, Episode 2 is... Rand Paul. Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky recently conducted an interview with Fortune magazine's Tony Niemeyer, who asked the senator about the cryptocurrency in a new interview. The Business Insider has the story, which I'll have a link to in the show notes. While he likes it in principle, Paul says there's one thing he would change about it to align it more with the values of those who are skeptical about central banks, and that is, have it backed by something of value. In this case, he proposes, what do you think, gold? No, stocks. And here's the full quote. I was looking at it until that recent thing. Sick. And actually, my theory, if I were setting it up, I'd make it exchangeable for stock, and that it'd have real value. And I'd have it pegged, and I'd have a basket of 10 big retailers. I think it would work, but I think because I'm sort of a believer in currency having value, if you're going to create a currency, have it backed by, you know, Hayek used to talk about a basket of commodities. You could have a basket of stocks and have some exchangeability because it's hard for people like me who are a bit tangible. But you could have an average of stocks. I'm wondering if that's the next permutation. Well, Senator Rand Paul, I think Bitcoin is just fine as it is. It's a medium of exchange, and it'll have value because people want it. That's all that's necessary. Congratulations, Senator Rand Paul. You're the guru on Mad Men Machine Season 2, Episode 2. So you know the Mad Money Machine has its roots as an investing show going back to December 2005 when I first launched this ship. And we're talking about picking stocks and, you know, trading stocks, and come to find out that active investing is not the right solution. For a while, a sponsor of the show was IFA.com, Index Funds Advisors. And they Mark Hebner out there has a book called Index Funds, a 12-step program for active investors. And I kind of adapted his 12 steps into a series of little segments that talk about redeeming yourself from the active investing lifestyle and what you need to do to really make it as an investor. And, you know, I think it's true not just for stock ownership, but there are people out there who actively trade Bitcoin. And I think if you're, you know, if you're thinking about actively trading Bitcoin, you may want to listen to these segments and pay attention to these 12-step program for active investors. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. A 12-step program for active investors. Step 1, active investors. My name is Paul, and I'm an active investor. It was 9:30 on a Monday morning. My wife came to me and asked if I wanted to go for a walk. Well, the stock market was just then opening after a tough news weekend. So I said I was busy and would have to wait for another day. She went walking without me. What was I supposed to say? Look, I know I need help. Somebody, please rescue me.
You came by my heart today. Said, let's go walking like we used to. But I was busy, busy as sin. Gonna have to wait for another day. So you walk away. What am I supposed to say here now? Is there somewhere you can rescue me? Somewhere you can bring me home again? Somewhere you can rescue me? Rescue me. Rescue me.
Do you own actively managed mutual funds? Do you select stocks you think can outperform a market? Do you think there are times to be in a market and times to be out of a market? Do you think that active managers with the best track records are best for managing your investments? Do you shift in and out of styles or indexes in an effort to chase returns? Are you primarily invested in the S&P 500, thinking this provides adequate diversification? Do you believe that now is the best time to invest in certain sectors? Do you invest without considering risk capacity or risk exposure? Do you invest without first studying the academic research that explains how and why free markets work? Do you keep a stash of Rolaids on hand to cope with short-term market volatility? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then you're an active investor and you need to be rescued. We're here to help you. We'll bring you home.
Is there somewhere you can rescue me? Somewhere you can bring me home again? Somewhere you can rescue me? Rescue me. Rescue me.
Call the Mad Money Machine voicemail line at 571-366-7121.
So what gives Bitcoin value after all? I mean, it's just bits. How can bits have any value? Well, I was watching an episode of Nova called The Fabric of the Cosmos. A particular episode in there was What is Space? Narrated by Brian Greene. Also in this clip, you'll hear from Leonard Susskind from Stanford University. Turns out, bits are pretty important.
As we examine the fabric of the cosmos ever more closely, we may well find far more surprises than anyone ever imagined. Take me, for example. I seem real enough, don't I? Well, yes. But surprising new clues are emerging that everything, you and I, and even space itself, may actually be a kind of hologram. That is, everything we see and experience, everything we call our familiar three-dimensional reality, may be a projection of information that's stored on a thin, distant, two-dimensional surface, sort of the way the information for this hologram is stored on this thin piece of plastic. Now, holograms are something we're all familiar with, from the security symbol you find on most credit cards. But the universe is a hologram? That's one of the most drastic revisions to our picture of space and reality ever proposed. And the evidence for it comes from some of the strangest realms of space, black holes.
This is a real disconnect, and it's very hard to get your head around. Modern ideas coming from black holes tell us that reality is two-dimensional, that the three-dimensional world, the full-bodied three-dimensional world, is a kind of image of a hologram on the boundary of the region of space. This is a very strange thing. When I was a younger physicist, I would have thought any physicist who said that was absolutely crazy.
Here's a way to think about this. Imagine I took my wallet and threw it into a black hole. What would happen? We used to think that since nothing, not even light, can escape the immense gravity of a black hole, my wallet would be lost forever. But it now seems that may not be the whole story. Recently, scientists exploring the math describing black holes made a curious discovery. Even as my wallet disappears into the black hole, a copy of all the information it contains seems to get smeared out and stored on the surface of the black hole, in much the same way that information is stored in a computer. So, in the end, my wallet exists in two places. There's a three-dimensional version that's lost forever inside the black hole, and a two-dimensional version that remains on the surface as information.
The information content of all the stuff that fell into that black hole can be expressed entirely in terms of just the outside of the black hole. The idea then is that you can capture what's going on inside the black hole by referring only to the outside.
And in theory, I could use the information on the outside of the black hole to reconstruct my wallet. And here's the truly mind-blowing part. Space within a black hole plays by the same rules as space outside a black hole or anywhere else. So if an object inside a black hole can be described by information on the black hole surface, then it might be that everything in the universe, from galaxies and stars to you and me, even space itself, is just a projection of information stored on some distant, two-dimensional surface that surrounds us. In other words, what we experience as reality may be something like a hologram.
Is the three-dimensional world an illusion in the same sense that a hologram is an illusion? Perhaps. I think I'm inclined to think, yes, that the three-dimensional world is a kind of illusion and that the ultimate precise reality is the two-dimensional reality at the surface of the universe.
This idea is so new that physicists are still struggling to understand it. But if it's right, just as Newton and Einstein completely changed our picture of space, we may be on the verge of an even more dramatic revolution.
I told you bits were pretty important. Bitcoin is just bits, but so is everything else. The whole universe and everything that's in it. Contemplate that for a while. Yes, indeed. If you'd like to learn more about how the universe was constructed, you can go to Amazon. If you have Amazon Prime, you can watch that for free. It's Nova Season 1, The Fabric of the Cosmos, Episode 1, What is Space? I'd like to keep on that theme now of why does Bitcoin have value? You know, Rand Paul wants to tie it to a basket of something tangible. Well, Bitcoin already has value. And there was an article out at Bitcoin Magazine by Mark Rees on May 7th. 22 reasons why Bitcoin has value. I don't know if I'm going to make it through all 22 of these, but let's start with number one. It transcends nations, politics, religions, cultures, and regulations. They say the U.S. government bans online gambling. Is this a moral decision? Many of the same governments think it is morally acceptable to hold their own state lotteries. Well, Bitcoin transcends all of those borders. Number two, it requires no trust. It can't be counterfeited. There's a record of who owns it, and its validity is publicly known. Number three, it can be transparent. By making wallet IDs public, one can track the flow of money through other transparent wallets. Number four, it can be programmable. Number five, it can require multiple signatures. Number six, it can be spent over the internet without a bank account, credit report, identification, or pre-permissions. Number seven, we're making our way through this pretty well. It can store irrevocable and time-stamped records of transactions. Love it. Number eight, it allows you to keep your identity from being stolen. How about that, credit card companies? Number nine, it does allow movement across borders. Number 10, the same wallet can be used anywhere in the world that has a connection to the internet. Number 11, in the reasons why Bitcoin does have value, it can move independently of banking rules, laws, and restrictions. Number 12, it can be used to resist corruption. It's a little detail here. It says if the citizens stand up united and demand a transparent government, they can use Bitcoin to follow the money in the same way governments use powers at their disposal for surveillance on their own populations. Number 13, it can be made to settle contracts without other parties. Number 14, there are no age requirements. Boy, that's a big one, isn't it? You know, we should really focus more on the fact that, you know, an 8-year-old, a 13-year-old, a 17-year-old can use Bitcoin just as easily as someone over 21 years of age. Number 15, it is more difficult to be used as surveillance. It says the main attributes of money are often quoted these days, but one attribute is rarely mentioned. Money has become surveillance. Uh-huh. Number 16, making our way all the way to 22, Bitcoin as money bandwidth. If one were to transfer value between large companies or nations, much of the world has discovered Bitcoin to be a very efficient payment network to do this. Number 17, it can be the basis of a new ecosystem. Right now, entire new ecosystems are being built up around the new currency. And don't we know that with all the Bitcoin startups that are out there. Number 18, it can upend centuries-old money monopolies. And we're looking forward to that. Number 19, the democratization of money. They say an explosive report from a whistleblower from the World Bank reports that all networked banking infrastructure throughout the entire world can be tracked back to 12 people who make decisions at the privately controlled U.S. Federal Reserve Bank. Consensus-driven public records and democratization of money made possible by Bitcoin might change the rules. 20, three to go, gives the unbanked population access to banking features they might not otherwise enjoy. 21, it can be extremely hard to steal. Well, if you set it up right. And the last one, 22, in the reasons why Bitcoin does have value, it represents economic freedom. Because of all the reasons stated above, it might as well be called the currency of freedom. That's 22 reasons why Bitcoin does have value, Rand Paul. I want to thank you so very much for joining me this week. This is Paul Boyer saying it takes money to make money and it takes millibits to make a mad money machine. I'll see you next Friday, May the 30th at 3 p.m. In the meantime, buy some Bitcoin, spend some Bitcoin, donate some Bitcoin, and help the Mad Money Machine show by donating some Bitcoin at madmoneymachine.com, and then replenish your Bitcoin. Support the supporters of this show. Go to Brawker.com, B-R-A-W-K-E-R. You can buy Bitcoins with a credit card or PayPal, or you can spend Bitcoins nearly everywhere. If you enjoy the show, would you tweet it at Mad Money Machine? You can email me, bitcoin@madmoneymachine.com. You can find me at Facebook, Twitter, and Reddit. You can call the voicemail line, 571-366-7121. Or you can also comment at SoundCloud or letstalkbitcoin.com or at the YouTube channel. Thank you so much. I'm going to close the show with a song now. So if you don't like music, you may end the podcast. This is Newsboys with Go Glow. See you next week.
Sleeping, the morning's already here. Are you dreaming? Can you hear him in your ear? Let your fire burn infectious. You are his reflection. Are you sleeping? The morning's already here. He wakes up.
Hey, well, good on you. You stayed for the music. If you like Newsboys, their new album Restart has got some really good tunes on it. Also, of course, the movie featured them called God's Not Dead, and that's the name of their previous album, God's Not Dead, and that's got a lot of good songs on it, too. You can check out a lot of those songs, including this Go Glow. They're available on YouTube. I'll see you next week.